Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Movies look so easy on the screen, but the trip from story to script to finished movie is long and arduous. So how do you do it? How do you break into the film industry? Well, you may have heard of a festival called Raindance. Based in London, Raindance is a combination of movies, courses, lectures, and networking, a veritable indie hub for aspiring actors, writers, and filmmakers. It's where new players turn to learn the ropes of filmmaking. Founded in 1993, author and filmmaker Elliot Grove is in Toronto this week, and I'm very pleased to have Elliot here with me at CIUT to tell us more about how to make movies.
Great to be here.
Thanks for coming. So let's just start topically. What do you think of the fact that an Oscar went to a low-budget indie movie, Moonlight?
Well, that shows that the things you need to win an Oscar, first of all, you need to make great content. And secondly, you need to have a great marketing campaign. And fortunately for that movie, it had both. It also helped them. I think they had some guy called Donald Trump sort of being, you know, branded as a racist, which meant that this was like the counter balance to that, I suppose. But yeah, well done. It's amazing.
Do you think it offers hope for, I mean, you must deal with thousands of aspiring filmmakers every year. Does this give them more hope to have a indie film make it to the top like that?
Yeah, what it shows is that the industry, Hollywood so-called, still is not that doesn't have the iron walls. You can still hammer it down if you've got the right project.
So what do you think is the role indies play within the film industry as a whole?
Well, the main Hollywood film industry always say they love independent film, which is in fact not true. They hate independent filmmakers because they are younger, fresher, brighter, and more importantly, cheaper than the high-end industry counterparts. But, of course, they look at independent filmmakers for all the new ideas, as La La Land was actually based, you could call that an indie film too, even though it was a $30 million budget. And Hollywood turned that film down 8 years ago, take 8 years for Damien Chazelle to get that film made, because it had the word jazz in it. So he went and made a short film that became Whiplash. And when that done well, then he got the money to do La La Land. And everyone thought it would fail. And of course, it nearly won the best film the other night, as you know.
So if someone is looking, this is like a huge, huge question, but how does someone who's just beginning, who has, let's say, I have a great idea for a movie, how do they turn that into the real thing? That's a huge question, I realize.
Yeah, but you got an idea. It's in your head. It's meaningless. Everyone's got great ideas for movies. So the first thing you need to do is get it out on paper, which is what I'm doing on Sunday here at the Raindance Film Studio in Carlisle. I'm talking about in the morning how you get it out of your head onto paper. Now, a lot of these screenwriting books and very, very expensive screenwriting seminars talk all weekend about the craft of screenwriting. But really, I found it over my time at Raindance is that the equally important part is how do you sell it? So in the afternoon, I'm talking about pitching and how you package and how you communicate your idea to potential investors, talent, and crew. And it's when filmmakers understand that and when screenwriters understand that, they have a much better chance of getting their films made. And once the films are made, as you well know, will it get an Oscar or a Canadian Film Award of some type or so on? Or better yet, will it make enough money so that the filmmaker can pay back their investors and their landlord and do it again?
You've been doing this since, 1993?
Yeah.
The world has changed a lot. So with crowdfunding and YouTube and things and social networking, mm-hmm. has the nature of putting a film together fundamentally changed, or is it, in your mind, is it still the same?
Well, 25 years ago when I started this, Princess Diana was still alive, and you pretty much needed $1 million, euros, pounds to make a movie, and then it pretty much got into cinemas, and then it came out in home video, and you get your money back, almost dead cert. But of course, February 15th, 2005 was a very key date in the film industry. That was the date the three co-founders of YouTube registered YouTube.com. And you can check this out in the internet registry, whois.com. Took them another 9 months to get the website working. And 6 months later, Just 6 months later, they sold it to eBay for almost $1 billion, and now, of course, it's part of the Google family. And the reason this is significant is because people are more likely to watch their movies at home on the internet, or in the last 5 years, on their devices, traveling to work on TTC or whatever, or at home on their laptop or their whatever. And the whole distribution models have changed. And back then in 1993, I started Rain Dance as a thought experiment, which basically was, can you make a movie with no money? I didn't have any, I'd just gone bust in property in London. Can you make it with no film experience? I didn't have much or any. And can you do it without any film training? I'd never been to film school. In fact, I went here to Toronto when I was a kid to Central Technical School.
Central Tech. It's just up, right over there.
Yeah. Just up there. And my three-year graduation certificate proclaims me an expert in cire perdu, lost wax bronze casting.
a useful profession.
Nothing to do with film. And my first intern was a guy called Edgar Wright, who worked, he was a 17-year-old guy, carried the boxes up and down the stairs. And then about a year later, I met a late teenager who was studying English at a local London university because at the age of 16, he had made a tactical error and said to mom and dad that what he really wanted to do was to become a filmmaker. And they said, what do you want to do that for? So to appease mom and dad, he was getting a degree in English in case his filmmaking degree didn't work out. I met him at the university. He had joined the Film Society and they had a cupboard full of free equipment and he was making short films. He graduates, gets a dumb job stacking shelves at Boots the Chemist in Piccadilly Circus. If you're in London, it's still there. And then every Friday night, my office was nearby, give him the key, and he would circle past the Film Society, pick up the field equipment, and shoot Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday morning, give me back the key and go back to this dumb job. And he did that for every weekend for 9 months, made his debut feature film for about $8,000-$9,000 called The Following, black and white 16mm feature in the day. He remade it 18 months later in Los Angeles in a film you might have heard of called Memento.
Oh,
so I'm talking about Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
And sort of proved that you don't need all this stuff to make a movie. And of course, nowadays, many people are making movies on their cell phones. The technology on your cell phone.
Tangerine.
Yeah. And the year before, the documentary that won best Oscar for best documentary was called The Search for Sugarman.
Oh, yeah.
Shot in a cell phone. Shot in a cell phone. And the cell phone here I've got in front of me, that you can see here, that's switched off. The technology of this phone 25 years ago when I started Rain Dance, you could get a camera that would do this, but it cost about $50,000. And now they give it to you when you get your plan with your, you know, Rogers or whatever. And that's really, really changed, which is good. It's cheaper to make movies. What's good and bad about that is it's cheaper to make movies, so everyone's doing it. So now we come back to your story. Story is everything. But if I can tell you a story about Roger Corman, do you know who that is?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah,
the horror meister.
The king of the bees.
Yeah.
I spent a week with him in 1996. He came to the festival. And he's a morning guy. He'd come in with all the British morning papers, and we'd have a coffee, and he would rip out keywords from the headlines, jam them up, mash them up, and when he saw one, he would handwrite it out on a piece of paper in the days of the old, you know, the thin paper fax it off to Los Angeles, now 10 in the morning. He'd go around, do all his meetings, come back at 6 o'clock at night. LA is now open, and through my fax machine would come these really low-res posters that his graphic designer back home had done. And he'd rip them off, shove them in his pocket, and then you'd meet all the film distributors in the UK that night. And he would tell me the next morning if enough distributors liked the poster, low res as it was, he, on his return to Los Angeles, would hire a screenwriter to write the script represented
so
by the poster.
So the first thing was the poster, which you think was the very last thing. That's what caused him to make or not make a movie.
Yeah, and I follow this in my own
producing. Snakes on a plane.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is... this is something that screenwriters and filmmakers need to be aware of, the sharp end of the selling. I just came back from the European film market in Berlin 2 weeks ago.
Was that during the Berlinale? Or?
Yeah, it's the film market runs simultaneous.
Oh, okay.
There's another big market in Cannes during the Cannes Film Festival.
Of course, and Toronto as well.
In Toronto in September, and then, of course, in Los Angeles in November, the American film market. In Berlin, there were roughly 5,000 films being sold. And you get a big schedule, I should have brought it, where you see real fine print, 2-3 words title, country, length, maybe director. and that's it. So how can you compete with all the other 4,999 films? Well, you get the proper one sheet, right? And the thing is, you can do that even at script stage to get money and interest for your film the same way Roger Corman did.
Right.
So it's what I've learned the hard way. You know, I grew up Amish outside Toronto here when I was a kid, and we had a dairy, Grove Dairy. And my dad had those glass bottles, but blue Grove Dairy.
Yeah.
And we ran out of bottles once, I'll never forget, and they sent bottles, but not in blue, but in orange. And my dad's going, oh, no. But he had to go to market. But he finds out he's coming back an hour earlier. And the next day, and the next day, and then he runs out of orange bottles. They sent blue bottles, and I was an hour later. And he couldn't figure it out. So I was there in the dairy. He fills up two bottles, one with the orange and one with the blue labels, and realized that the milk in the orange labeled bottle looked creamier.
Hmm.
And I think that's a trick of screenwriters and filmmakers, as how do you make your milk, so to speak, look creamier than the other action or rom-com or whatever it is that's out competing with you.
Interesting. So you must see, I mean, you travel around the world with these workshops and mm-hmm. lectures and panel discussions. What grabs you about a film you first heard of?
It's always the story, the amazing story. I mean, I was pitched one in London on Monday this week. It's about a medieval knight warrior who's living in Malaysia, and he gets sent by the monks. He was a Jesuit, to Japan, because the Jesuits had just broken up in Japan.
Like silence.
Yeah, but he finds out when he gets there, he's a warrior, priest, warrior. He's not going to work for the Jesuits. He's assigned to the local warlord. And because the Jesuits chose a certain warlord, that tribe or whatever became dominant. But the problem is, the leader of that warlord tribe was killed, and now the 15-year-old boy, the son of the father, is the one that's bossing this guy around. So it's a story not only of the historical dominance in warfare, but the relationship between this middle-aged man and this 15-year-old kid and how they fell in and out and respect and all that. Fascinating story. And the writer of this is a cinematographer living in Japan for 20 years. He's actually German. Now he's in London for 2 years trying to get this film off the ground while he's doing some stuff for National Geographic out of London, England. I just thought it was a fascinating story.
I would watch that for sure, yeah.
Yeah, you learn about, it's almost like a father-son thing, but not.
You got the fighting, the story, the family, tenderness.
And he's trying to relate this to Donald Trump and all this nonsense. That might be. No, but it's like a parallel story, really.
Oh, okay. Donald Trump.
Say those two words too loudly, especially here in Canada.
That's all we hear on TV nowadays. Finally, is there, if you were to give advice to the aspiring filmmaker, what one sentence of advice would you give them?
Learn how stuff is sold. Go to a film market.
Okay. Thanks so much for talking with me. Elliot Grove is in Toronto this weekend with panel discussions and workshops on breaking into the film industry. For more information, go to raindance.com/Toronto. This is Daniel Garber the Movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.